Good morning, and thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is David Lipschultz. I'm the attorney for Thomas Frizzell. This is a Section 1983 police misconduct case that was tried before a jury in the Central District of Illinois. It is Mr. Frizzell's argument that the district court committed reversible error by tendering a nominal damages instruction. This court utilizes a two-part test to determine whether it should reverse the district court on jury instructions. First, there must be a determination whether the instruction is a sufficiently correct statement of law. Second, if the instruction is not a correct statement, did the error prejudice the complaining party? This comes from Wilson versus Williams. In Mr. Frizzell's case, the nominal damages jury instruction was not a sufficiently correct statement of law. The instruction informed the jury, if you find in favor of plaintiff, but find that plaintiff has failed to prove compensatory damages, you must return a verdict for plaintiff in the amount of $1. However, pain, not injury, is the barometer by which the U.S. Supreme Court and this court measures excessive force. It is well established in Lewis v. Downey of the Seventh Circuit that taser causes pain and is more than the de minimis application of force. Frizzell proved that he suffered pain. He proved that compensatory damages were the appropriate remedy. The instruction was improper. Now, Deputy Szabo in Sangamon County.
Are you saying the jury, if the jury concluded that there were no damages, the court should not have instructed the jury at all in response to the jury question?
Your Honor, I would answer the question by saying that the jury was confused by the addition during their deliberations of the nominal damages instruction. It is our position that the judge erred by submitting that instruction, and instead, the jury should have wrestled with a compensatory damage instruction, which said that if you find for the plaintiff, which they did, they must determine an appropriate amount of compensatory damages.
But the plaintiff elected not to suggest a damage figure to the jury, is that correct?
That is correct.
But what's the reason for that?
Well, the trial tactical reason is that we don't want to insult the jury. We want the jury to make their own determination. And we don't want to insult them with a high number. So the plaintiff is looking for justice, and the plaintiff leaves it to the jury to determine the appropriate amount of justice and, accordingly, the appropriate amount of money.
Is it possible that the not asking the jury for a number, a range, or anything like that, the kind of thing that in a trial like this triggers a question like that from the jury?
Well, it probably does, Your Honor. I would argue that we did suggest a possible range of dollar amounts to the jury by referencing the jury to Deputy Szabo's counterclaim prayer for relief. Deputy Szabo countersued Mr. Frizzell for battery. The jury found that Mr. Frizzell did not batter Deputy Szabo. Deputy Szabo asked for $75,000, and in closing arguments, the Mr. Frizzell's attorneys, our office, referenced that as a possible guidepost. So, given the straightforward barometer being pain, Deputy Szabo and Sangamon County very strategically shifts this court's attention away from the tasering, and they pluck out two very minor incidents. One was a pepper spray of Mr. Frizzell, and second was a reference by Mr. Frizzell at trial that at one point Deputy Szabo sat on Mr. Frizzell's chest. In doing so, Deputy Szabo and the appellees are trying to convince you that, pursuant to the Briggs case, that the excess of force came from the pepper spray or from sitting on the chest, and that those actions cause no injury, because the Briggs case holds that when there's reasonable force and excessive force, and the injury may have resulted from the reasonable force, a nominal damages instruction is appropriate. But Mr. Frizzell asked this court to understand and recognize that this was an excessive force case about tasering. 99% of the testimony was about the tasering. There is not any mention in Mr. Frizzell's complaint at law to Deputy Szabo sitting on his chest at any point in time. Our office does not bring excessive force cases for pepper spraying and for sitting on somebody's chest. What the jury heard, even from the appellee's witness, lieutenant who trained Deputy Szabo on using a taser, was that, in our argument, Deputy Szabo used a sadistic amount of tasering on Mr. Frizzell. Between shots number one and two, taser shots number one and two, Deputy Szabo waited 3 seconds before shooting a second time. Between shots number two and three, Deputy Szabo waited 4 seconds. He then shot him a third time, then waited 23 seconds, shot him a fourth time, waited 24 seconds, shot him a fifth time. During this entire time, it is undisputed that Mr. Frizzell was down on the ground. There were less, strike that, there were more reasonable mechanisms by which Deputy Szabo could have affected the handcuffing. The reference to the pepper spray and to Mr. Frizzell's chest is simply a distraction. Moreover,
what reasonable means could he have used?
Your Honor, Mr. Frizzell was tasered and flat on his back. All Deputy Szabo had to do was handcuff him. And Deputy Szabo argues that he's 5'6", and then
I recall at least some witness saying he kept getting up.
Your Honor, there was testimony that he kept getting up in a push-up position. That was disputed by Mr. Frizzell and an eyewitness. But even there, the arm of Mr. Frizzell was readily exposed. Your Honor, also, it's, I believe, very important for this court to recognize that the appellees are asking this court to speculate as to how the jury, what act the jury found to be excessive. And in the case of Wilson versus Williams, the Seventh Circuit said, quote, we will not guess as to what the jury actually believed. And they are basing their speculation on a one-line reference by Mr. Frizzell that that Deputy Szabo sat on his chest, and to the pepper spray. It's interesting in Appellee's response brief that there's no great time spent on the pepper spray besides referencing Judge Scott's opinion that maybe the jury found excessive force on the pepper spray, because the pepper spray, like a taser, causes pain and is sufficient for compensatory damages. We ask that this court not engage in speculation and recognize that the jury found for Mr. Frizzell for the tasering. I'll use my remaining time to move to the attorney's fees issue. The district court, Mr. Frizzell argues, erred in denying the plaintiff's motion for attorney's fees. Since there are three factors set forth in Johnson versus Lafayette Firefighters, the first factor for attorney's fees is the difference between the judgment recovered and the recovery sought. Since we did not seek a high number for dollar amount attorney's fees, the difference between our basic blank request for money is not very different from the $1 that was received. Secondly, the plaintiff, Mr. Frizzell, successfully vindicated his rights. He proved to a jury at law that the Sangamon officer used excessive force. And thirdly, the public interest was served. There is it is unquestioned that Sangamon County police officers know that five shots by one of their colleagues resulted in an excessive force victory. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Unrath.
Good afternoon. My name is Craig Unrath, and I represent Deputy Sabo. At the close of evidence, the trial judge held a jury instruction conference, and we asked for an instruction on nominal damages. Plaintiff's counsel objected, and I can understand why he objected. The reason is simple. You don't want to suggest to the jury, you don't want to invite the jury to consider that nominal damages is even appropriate, so you leave that out. Judge Scott agreed with them, gave them the benefit of the doubt on that, ruled in their favor, and gave no instruction on nominal damages. Now, as it turned out, the jury arrived at the issue of nominal damages all on its own, without being invited, without being encouraged by the court. There was no seed planted in their mind by the court. The seed was planted by the evidence, and they sent a note, and they said, we're considering finding in favor of plaintiff, but we want to know, are we required to award damages? Now, it's an astute question. It's a kind of question that legal scholars discuss. How did the judge respond to this? Well, the judge responded by giving Seventh Circuit pattern jury instruction 7.23. She instructed them that if you are considering that if they have not proved compensable harm, then you should award $1 in damages. Now, I don't see how we can assign error to a court's decision to follow the Seventh Circuit pattern jury instructions. The issue, she was afraid that the instruction initially might invite nominal damages. Once the jury arrived at that on their own, at that point, that instruction was not only appropriate, I would suggest that it was the only appropriate answer. Now, the committee comments to the Seventh Circuit pattern instruction 7.08 specifically acknowledges that harm, compensable injury, may not always be an element to a claim for excessive force. And this is based largely on this court's decision in Briggs, where the court recognized that there are times when the excessive force was reasonable. Perhaps some of the force was reasonable, some wasn't. Now, look at the situation we have in this case. We have a traffic stop for a minor violation. Deputy Sabo informed the plaintiff. He said, this is about a seatbelt. Now, Mr. Frizzell disputes that, but the jury has a right to believe Deputy Sabo. He knows that this is a seatbelt violation, and he's running away. And he says, stop. And he continues to run away. He pulls his car in front of him, and he says, if you don't stop, you're under arrest. He continues to flee. He puts an arm on him, tries to restrain him, says, you are now under arrest. He still continues to flee. Now, he's trying to enter a public store. He's had experience. He testified in the past that when people are trying to evade arrest, they go into a public place like this. Now, what does Deputy Sabo know about this situation? Does he know that he's a Lowe's employee? He does not. Mr. Frizzell said he claims he told him, but that evidence is disputed, and the jury had a right to believe Deputy Sabo. What does Deputy Sabo know? Does he know whether there's a warrant out on this man? Does he know whether he's armed? Is there a concern that if he's armed, that this may develop into a hostage situation or gunplay inside the store? This man has to be restrained. He has to be stopped now. He warned him that if you do not stop, I will tase you. and he kept on going. And we have witnesses who say that after being tased repeatedly, he continued to struggle with the officer. And I'd reference the testimony of the registered nurse who said he was wild. It was as though he was acting on drugs. I submit that the jury had every right to believe that the use of the taser and possibly even the pepper spray were entirely justified and played no role in its verdict against Deputy Szabo. So here we are. We're trying to find what aspect of this entire event was excessive. Plaintiff's counsel says, we're asking the court to speculate. With respect, the counsel's making the same speculation. He's saying, maybe the jury just didn't like him.
Why wasn't a verdict submitted in a form that would have given you that information?
I believe that we could have asked a special interrogatory, but I guess it never arose, Your Honor. We believed that we were going to prevail. We didn't see any need for a special interrogatory. So what is it? The question here is not speculation. Now we're drawing a difficult line. What we're looking for is this. Is there any reasonable basis underlying this verdict? We are, one way or the other, trying to look at the facts and to determine if there's any portion of these facts that fit the jury's verdict. The decision to award a new trial is left to the sound discretion of the trial court. Now, the abuse of discretion, this is the highest standard of review available to this court or any other court of review. That verdict will be upheld if there is any evidence in the record that supports the verdict, and we submit that evidence is apparent from the record. The same standard, abuse of discretion, is applied toward an award of attorney fees. There is only one exception, and that's if the judge makes an error of law as to that award. But there's been no suggestion here that he erred in the law. As a matter of fact, the parties are agreed on this, that he applied the appropriate standard. What he found was that the difference between the judgment recovered and the amount sought was just too great. And as Justice O'Connor said, when a plaintiff recovers only nominal damages, the only reasonable award of attorney's fees is no fee at all. I don't see how Judge McCuskey's ruling can be construed as an abuse of discretion. That's all I have, Your Honor. If there are no further questions for the court, we ask that the jury's verdict be affirmed. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.